Before we get started, a quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible. Now on to the show. Welcome to our show. And on today's program, we have Mr. Peter Duffy from Piper Sandler. Peter, how are you, sir?
Doing well, thanks, Mark.
Good, good. Glad to have you on because you're always a wealth of information. And one of the times we had you on last fall, you talked about the battle for core deposits. And that was one of our top viewed videos for quite a while last year and early into 2023. So thank you for that. And a lot of great educational material in that discussion as well. So, and today we're kind of segueing off that topic, the battle for core deposits in light of the recent bank failures and the current liquidity crunch. So, and this is all based on some recent research that you guys at Piper Sandler have conducted as well. So can you share with us, give us a quick overview on what's the latest here?
Right. If we go back to 5 years ago, coming out of the housing crisis, regulators on the bank side changed some things to the bank regulations that we said back then had the potential to rewire the DNA of banks. And specifically what that means is, as it relates to the way they price deposits, there were some regulatory changes that, without getting into it now in a short time, we get into this in our board meetings with credit unions, it would motivate the banks to pay higher on deposit to more people and more broadly. Mm-hmm. And in fact, it did do that. The banks started to outpay the credit unions on deposit. In the first time we did it, we looked at 20 major markets in the U.S., and the money center banks went above the credit unions in cost of deposit, not cost of funds.
Okay.
Cost of deposit is obviously what they pay on deposit. Cost of funds includes borrowings. So when you look at cost of deposits, the money center banks, which are the five biggest banks in the country, and then the other banks were outpaying the credit unions in all 20 of those major markets.
Wow.
And then the pandemic hit, and the banks lowered their cost of deposit faster than the credit unions did. And the credit unions dipped back above for about a year. And then last year, the money center banks and the big banks went above the credit unions again. And this is literally in every major market we looked at, as well as U.S. So we thought we should take a look again in the first quarter because of everything that occurred. Had Signature Bank, Silicon Valley Bank, among others, really struggling and then eventually failing. Piper Sandler advised the FDIC on the resolution of Silicon Valley Bank and Signature Bank. So we had a proceed. So anyway, we did look at the first quarter, and there were some interesting things. First of all, it still remains that in these now 15 major markets we looked at, cities like LA, New York, Boston, Dallas, Houston, Seattle, the money center banks and the banks are outpaying credit unions, and actually by quite a lot,
mm-hmm.
and as well as total U.S. So we decided to look more closely at not only what's occurring for the battle of deposits, but the impact it's having on net interest margin. Because obviously, if your competitor is paying more, then you have to pay more than you have been to retain what you have, as well as try to grow. And that'll have an impact on margin, unless your yield on earning assets is also going up commensurate with your funds.
Mm-hmm.
Or cost of deposits. So we looked at the credit unions. There's 20 credit unions with assets greater than $10 billion in the U.S. now.
Right.
And there's a bunch about to cross over $10 billion. But right now we have 22. 18 of the 22 saw a decline in their net interest margin in the first quarter. And all 22 had to raise their cost of funds. And in fact, their cost of funds for the 20 up 38%. which is a big number.
Yeah.
So then we looked at the credit unions with assets $1 billion to $10 billion, which covers 440 credit unions.
A lot.
And that group saw their cost of funds go up 57%, and 408 of the 440 had to raise their cost of funds, and 380 of the 440 had a decline in net interest margin.
Wow.
So obviously the implication here, Mike, is should it continue that there's a battle for core deposits in the U.S., and we believe there will be and would probably accelerate, then that information is going to inform the boards think about strategic considerations such as raising secondary capital, merger, and then for their teams, also think about tactically how do they protect margin, build income, and build capital and liquidity to deal with how much more competitive the business is truly getting. I mean, if you think about 5 years ago, people would say, well, the business is very competitive, and it was.
Yeah.
It's much more so now because of fintech, these changes to bank regulations, which is changing their behavior.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, another way to look at the big banks changing their behavior, they led the charge in reducing or eliminating fees on overdraft or bounce checks. If you look at the stories over the last couple of years, obviously a lot of credit unions reduced or eliminated too. Yep. But it's an interesting time right now. But credit unions need to think about areas in their balance sheet where they can help assuage the margin erosion, which is how they perform in the investment portfolio. If you're a Visa issuer, you probably own Visa B stock, which you can sell at a gain. You own it on your books and it becomes a boost to capital. We've done many of those transactions at Piper Sandler. There are ways we are actively advising credit unions on how to hedge the risk going forward on margins. The NCUA just did a big event at the New York Stock Exchange on balance sheet strategy, which included loan sales, loan purchases, hedging, liquidity management. Those are all things where credit unions can take second opinions on what they're doing on their balance sheet and see if there's not some smart ideas out there to help.
Yeah. Are there any smart ideas out there to help?
Well, there really is. I mean, if you think about it this way, credit unions just really received authority to hedge risk in their balance sheet less than 2 years ago. So many are starting to understand it and, in fact, put transactions in place that does reduce the risk on the balance sheet. That's our derivatives desk, where we do analysis and strategic considerations around balance sheet hedging, has a very robust schedule right now of conference calls and advisory helping credit unions consider that. And by the way, a lot of credit unions can take advantage of NCUA's regulations on hedging. So it's something that a lot of folks can look at, and most have until recently.
Right.
Secondary capital is also another way to look at issuing, bringing capital in, leveraging that capital into more earning assets and generating both ROA relief and net margin relief. And by the way, investing that capital in things that members care about.
I wanted to go back to, you said something earlier about the reduction or the elimination of NSF fees or overdraft fees, because last year, toward the end of the year, we got a lot of those stories. This year, I don't think I've had any of those stories. I haven't seen a lot of that. So has this had an effect on financial institutions, credit unions in this case, kind of putting on the brakes on doing that type of stuff because of the war on deposits?
Well, that's a great question. And I can't say that we have empirical proof of that. But what I can tell you, Mike, is this. the market that credit unions compete in versus banks, fintech, and other non-bank lenders is forcing change for everybody.
Yeah.
The change is being forced on the largest bank in the country, JP Morgan Chase, and everybody from the smallest up to them. And so while there might be reprieve for a while, if there is, on reducing overdraft and reducing the fees taken off of bounced checks, that relief is not going to last because more and more institutions are seeing that there's benefit to treating the customer differently in a better way for right. And so
I get it.
Right. It's a market taking advantage opportunity that you can broadcast, be you bank or credit union. But here's where it gets a little bit gnarly is whatever an institution has to do with reaction to the market and their customers is going to cost them in margin and ROA, which means while you're considering those things and in fact executing on those things, you have to also be considering and executing on the things that can relieve your margin and enhance your ROA.
Exactly.
They have to go hand in glove.
Right. Because I've been thinking about that a lot lately because of the whole liquidity crunch. Because ever since GAC, you know, when we were doing our interviews there, and the big topic of the show was liquidity. So all of a sudden, all those stories about these financial institutions kind of eliminating or reducing those fees kind of went away because I'm thinking, is that part of the reason why? Because they need this cash flow to kind of make up for what else is going on out there. So, I mean, I don't want to go down that tangent totally, but I've just been thinking a lot about that. And you coming on today has kind of triggered that thought to come to the forefront of my brain real quickly.
Right. No doubt. Now you've got, as a way to understand the liquidity scenario, we're used to seeing credit unions holding cash somewhere around 10% of total assets. Right now, the institutions greater than $1 billion, the largest credit union in aggregate, are averaging about 5% in cash.
Wow. So half.
While they're at 85 to 88 loan to share. So NCUA, I'm sure, is burning the midnight oil trying to stay on top of, you know, how can we help the credit unions navigate through this while all of the institutions are looking at ways to navigate. We know that they're trying to figure out how to navigate through it, and we're helping them navigate through it. But the issue becomes, at some point, what do our margins allow us to do? And that's where, while the consumer is being offered the opportunity to bank somewhere that doesn't charge them if they bank a bounce a check, that ripples through the whole market because there's no secrets in this business anymore. There's nothing anybody does that's so unique that they can patent it and somebody can't copy it the next day. So the commoditization of the business makes it particularly tough as well. So I think people are going to be very busy this year analyzing how to build income and protect margins, be it through synthetic opportunities by hedging as well as tangible things related to investments and raw cash and issuing capital and that kind of thing.
What impact did the bank failures have in this area, in the war for deposits? Obviously you're living this on the front lines day in and day out. So what have you seen in that area, especially, you know, looking toward the credit union industry?
Well, the regulatory community took some hits with those institutions, but actually the regulatory community by and large is really on their game. And so I know in the credit union space, the regulator is on their, because they were sitting down with institutions we know and many and saying, look, you've got a cash situation here and you've got a high loan to share. How are we going to work our way through this? And we would have that fed back to us. And I speak to the NCUA quite a bit as well, but we're hearing from our clients who are not at 85 loan to share, but they're at 75 or 78, and their cash position is more like 8, 9, 10% and not 5. And they're pulling back on the reins.
Oh, really?
Yeah, either in anticipation of the NCUA visiting, or the NCUA's visited and has in discussions, they've come together on a plan to just work through the next month. So it ripples through, and I think appropriately so. But I also think we're starting to see maybe a glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel. I don't want to get too crazy with this, but we're starting to hear institutions say, yeah, let's take a look at that next fintech lending idea. We're starting to see a real settling of our shares and the movement of cash in and out of accounts, and liquidity's building up a little bit. I think a large part of that will be, where does the Fed go from here? I think a glimmer of hope in the market right now that we'll start to see some settling down. And if we don't, it's not going to be good for the economy.
Yeah, but obviously the rumor about the Fed kind of putting the interest rate hikes on a kind of a hiatus has had a semi-positive effect in this area. So is that kind of rippling through the banking industry as well?
Well, there's always a lag on that, because after you've been burned, you don't go too close to the stove, right? But I think we are starting to see a little bit. But there's still, you know, these kind of markets, Mike, we always like to tell our clients, markets with turmoil are a great time to actually, instead of speed up or jam on the brakes, you kind of go into neutral or first gear and think about the things that allow you, this kind of market allows you the opportunity, if you let it, to think through those things that you didn't give much attention to, that now might actually make a difference in the way you compete in the marketplace. We always feel like it's a good time during a shakedown cruise to figure out where you can make tangible changes in the way you do business to improve what you do for your members. And be there for them in the future by how you produce capital and income and liquidity. So we always like these markets as opportunities for growth.
That's what I've heard too throughout the industry, especially kind of on the tech side. You know, now's the time to build and be ready when everything comes back. And speaking of coming back, not that we ever left, but is there, like, and you mentioned earlier, there's a little bit of a glimmer of light at the end of the tunnel. Is there kind of a timeline that you could put on this? Is it like, I've heard like, the fourth quarter is when things will semi-normalize again, if that's even possible. Because there's this thing called the recession that's been playing hide and seek for the entire year that was supposed to happen how many months ago? So what's in your crystal ball?
Well, our Office of Economic Experts, who are very good, do believe that there will be a recession. I would just say this. When I'm speaking off the cuff with clients, they and us tend to believe that the late third quarter, fourth quarter, you might see that there's something tangible that's changing for the better. But I can also share with you that we're all kind of hoping that as well.
Yeah.
So, you know, you get too crazy with where you think things are headed. Mm-hmm. I know I've almost always been directionally right and almost always been wrong on when. Okay. So I've learned not to get too crazy about
it. I got you. All right. Hey, I just had to ask. It's always good to have a time on things. So for sure.
Yeah.
Anything else? I mean, I know, Peter, we could talk about this for hours. And again, you live this day in and day out. So we always appreciate the education and the insights. But anything else to add to our time is unfortunately coming to a close here. But anything else to add here before we wrap up?
I do. I have one thing to maybe whet the appetite for the future. Normally, when you have markets like this, Mike, we've seen it in the past where you have 9/11 or the housing crisis, the Great Recession. Yeah. Turmoil in times past will usually lead to regulatory change. Now, over the recent years, the regulatory change for financial market participants, be they bank, credit union, thrift, fintech, the recent changes have moved the banks and credit unions closer to each other in the way they're regulated. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are not aware of that. And what's really happening is the credit unions are moving closer to bank-like supervision. You have the S on the end of CAMEL. That's a bank thing. You have a risk-based capital regime. Chairman of the NCUA just proposed to Congress to allow for the credit unions to have more insured shares, greater than 250,000, yeah, like the banks. That would require opening up the Federal Credit Union Act. In time past, when the Congress opens up an act like the Federal Credit Union Act, they sometimes don't go in and just do one thing. And there are things that can be done, not saying they will, but things that can be done that could move the credit unions even closer to bank-like supervision in ways that will really require some strategizing on, mm-hmm, how to deal with it, because it'll have financial impacts, yeah, if you will.
Yeah.
Let's both keep an eye on that, because I'm not saying it's going to happen. We're not, certainly not lobbying or proposing anything, but it could happen, and especially with the chairman proposing certain things, that we want to keep our eyes on that and understand it when it happens, so that the credit unions can be prepared on strategizing how to deal with it.
Completely. Yeah, that's a whole other show right there that I'm looking forward to, Peter. So for sure.
Right.
Good stuff. All right. Yeah, I know we're going to be talking again here soon. So yeah, but thank you again today for your time and your insights. Yep. Always an education. And yeah, look forward to the next chat. As always, Peter, well done.
Yeah, well, thank you. And I appreciate the comments. Look forward to talking again, Mike.
A quick word from our sponsor, Community Financial's present CEO, Tansley Stern's new podcast, Despite Impossible.